You'll soon come to know Anna is a phenomenally loving, empowered human being. She's a mentor, a coach, a wellness expert, a guide, somebody to carry your flashlight. And today we talk about the exhaustion of thinking about our thinking and that it's fundamentally the tool to our empowerment as well. You'll hear some tricks and tools and tips that we give our clients, and truly we're talking amongst one another about the biological proponents of automatic thinking and also the biological catalysts for breaking free and enlightening ourselves. It's fun. It's a challenge, and it requires a team. I'm really lucky that she said yes to this and that she's on mine.
Welcome to the Executive Shaman Podcast, where Dr. Crystal White and her comrades guide us to bring more wholeness, energy, and connectivity to our professions. We're ready, Crystal. Get us started.
So, welcome. That's Hello. The best place to start.
Great. I love starting at the beginning.
Let's start where we need to start. I just did a podcast on transitions, and it's fascinating where we say something begins and something ends. It's just a reflective endeavor in and of itself to say, where am I? Where are we together? So welcome.
Here we are.
I know. I'm happy to be here. And I ask everybody who comes on, whether it's their first time or they've been on a few times, the same question. And you can answer it any way that you really want. But the question is, what do you really do for a living?
Yeah. Okay. So today's answer, which will probably change from a future answer, or might not, who knows, is that I think I really am a philosopher who is deeply interested in the human condition as well as human potential. And you don't make a living doing that, at least I don't know how to make a living doing that, other than the work that I do, which is working with women who are driven and successful and on the spiritual path, but who are stuck in some kind of way. They've hit a roadblock that they can't overcome, and they're kind of swimming in self-doubt or self-judgment or confusion. And I take them on a journey to find themselves. We go back, you know, to who they are at their core. And through practicing tools of acceptance and awareness, we begin to spiral up out of that negativity into self-confidence and self-assurance, and from that place of self-acceptance, people are able to actually reclaim their lives and actually do pretty tremendous things with their lives as a result.
Yeah, I love this. I love on your tagline, it's, you know, I carry the flashlight for you. Yeah. I love that. Especially it resonates with me, just shining light on things. But
absolutely.
I like that absolutely. A lot. So I'm curious why you said yes to doing this podcast together.
Sure. I'm a huge fan of yours. I just adore you and your work, and will do anything to further that for you. And but also because I really am a huge advocate for collaboration, so that you know, through collaboration we're able to make much bigger ripples and have a greater effect in the world than we can on our own. And so any chance I get to collaborate, as long as it's resonant with me, I go for it. And I'm so happy to be here and excited that you have me.
Yeah, I really am honored that you said yes. And one of the interesting facts about just listening and speaking with multiple leaders from very diverse backgrounds is that we're all like expressing different tenets in the same ways, and then we're expressing the same tenets in very different ways. And so it's just a fascination of how beautiful relationships are, and how if you're open to those differences, that you can really quickly catalyze change. So thank you for being part of my change team. And the fascinating thing that you just said was like self-awareness. Now, of course, most people who work with me know that I follow a leadership development that is based in thought leadership, conscious leadership, and being aware of who you are, like almost self-moreness in order to be selfless. So share with me like your concept about reflection and how it is related to self-awareness and as a tool.
Mm-hmm. Totally. Yeah, I'm a huge fan of reflection. And in fact, outside of, you know, external kind of mystical or spiritual experiences that can, in a, kind of in a flash, produce awareness, I feel that that reflection is really just the most direct roadmap, the best way to get there, and that it can really just become a habit that just becomes second nature to you on your road to self-awareness. So for me, it is really fundamental. We gain awareness through seeing ourselves through other people's eyes, for instance, but even that is, again, like through a perspective that isn't necessarily our own lens. Mm-hmm. And so really doing the work and asking ourselves questions, examining our thoughts and feelings through reflection is really paramount.
Yeah, it's like a slowing down. And what are you willing to look at? I mean, that mm-hmm. reflect means you're, mm-hmm. you know, it's a re-examination of something that you're seeing in yourself. And research shows people have like over 50,000 to 70,000 thoughts per day. And yep. we're training people to think, right? You're just like right. a constant editor in my head. And my editor is so much, my actual true real life person editor is so much kinder. And she's mm-hmm. actually pretty bold and a badass herself. You mm-hmm. know, no mincing of words there. Mm-hmm. And so 70,000 thoughts. And the minute we wake up, like I forget the comfort of sleep. And it's just like,
go, 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 go.
And then, Anna, you and I are talking here. So there's 100,000 thoughts we have between each yeah. other all day. Yeah. And if you could just do the math really quickly, which I did, it's like around, let's the at range, 30 to 40 thoughts a minute.
Yeah, it's so insane.
It's so insane. So we're in teams of this, right? Teams of thought saturated. And mm-hmm. it's no wonder that it's really a challenge to put those thoughts on hold and look at them and mm-hmm. then juggle them around like a snow globe and decide which ones need to be let loose or kept or redefined. And it's overwhelming when you think about it.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it sure can be when you look at huge numbers like that, because I can't even begin to imagine like what 40 thoughts I have per second or whatever the number was that you just said. I think it was something like that. I mean, I can't even imagine a human potential outcome where we could be aware of every single thought. I mean, it would be crazy making, I think. But the thing about this is that there's no real space in our lives. There's no space that, you know, is kind of societally acceptable for us to begin to really process those thoughts. So most of us don't even develop habits of self-reflection outside of that, because we're just kind of, like you said, we're trained to be these thinkers. We're trained to be on this hamster wheel. And that's a big part of the work that I do with people, and probably that you do too, is making sure that we start to carve time out for that. That is, even if it's short, even if it's 15 minutes or 10 minutes a day or something to begin with, just to create a little bit of breathing space around that, because it can feel really overwhelming, as can the results of all of those thoughts. Because as you know, about 70% of what we're thinking is a self-limiting or self-negating thought, which then creates a base survival emotion in the body. And that's like, you know, 70% of what we're swimming in is survival chemistry.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It just doesn't feel good. That's not a fun pool to swim in.
No. And actually, when I'm self-aware that I'm swimming in that pool, I'm like, I end yeah. up here again. Like,
totally.
What? Totally. I'm supposed to be beyond. I'm supposed to have evolved.
Right.
And I, you know, the number one thing that I've worked with in like executive consulting and coaching and leading teams, the toughest clients are not the ones that are inexperienced. Those are awesome. Like I love doing mm-hmm. middle manager or supervisor programs. It's not even the ones that think they know everything. It's the ones that are kind of blaming others or, you know, not mm-hmm. being responsible. It's the ones who won't reflect on themselves. Those mm-hmm. are my toughest
totally
people.
Totally.
And there's lots of research. Like, people can look at organizational development research, and leaders, employees, staff that just spend 15 minutes at the end of the day, at work day, reflecting on what they learned that day. I bet it's even potentiated as a team. When I do my groups, I always am like, share your biggest learning. Almost always. And it's called something called checkout. Well, those people perform 23% better after 10 days. Just from that one.
That's just a brilliant statistic. And I'm not at all surprised by it. Like, it's just so, so powerful when you take a little bit of time to assess how you've been showing up in the world, what you learned, like celebrating things. Like, when we don't have space for reflection, we can't celebrate, or it's harder to see how far we've come, perhaps. And then these opportunities to celebrate our accomplishments, our growth, our evolution are often overlooked or sidestepped because we just don't have the awareness of how much we have developed ourselves or developed our work or whatever. So, and celebration is such an important aspect, you know?
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, there's another study too, that they were prompting commuters in the UK to just think about what you want for the day or plan out their day. And those were the ones that were happier and were less burnt out at work. And, you know, like, this is where somebody's like, well, what do you do for organizations? I was like, well, I optimize performance, and I do that by empowering people to own their thoughts and to select their actions that are aligned with who they are and what they want their life to be. Now, that sounds really simple. It's not, because, you know, we can't see ourselves. I don't walk around with a mirror. And oftentimes I hide myself, especially from me, but also from other people. And what I'm curious about is, what do you advise yourself, your loved ones, and especially your clients for using this at a routine basis or as a discipline?
Well, definitely with my clients, I have actually structured reflection into the work that I do, so they can't really get around it if they want to work with me on at a deep level. Then reflection is just a non-negotiable part of that, and really, that I'm hoping that becomes a habit, so that after we finish working at this deep level, that they continue to maintain reflection. And I create opportunities for that too. But you know, I think, you know, for me, it has just become a habitual methodology, just because, you know, I don't really like who I become when I'm not examining my thoughts and feelings, you know? And so, you know, for my friends, I really actually try not to get too much into my friends' world unless they ask for it. So, but, you know, but like I said earlier, just like creating a little bit of space, some breathing room in your life, which can be so challenging when you share your living space with other people, when you are married or you have children and you're cohabiting, and you know, there's always demands on you, or there's a TV going, or there's all this. It's not, I realize the gravity of what I'm asking for, and it really can be challenging when you don't have you know, full authority over your living space 24/7. At least that's what I find for me. So it is really important that I personally like carve out that time for reflection. And for me, a lot of that happens on my morning walk. I'm alone. I'm in, you know, I'm in nature as much as you can get in the city. And, you know, and I'm with my thoughts, and it's first thing in the morning, and I'm, you know, deciding how, you know, reflecting on how I was yesterday. What do I want to be today? How do I want to show up? And, you know, and what can I do to further that?
Yeah. I appreciate just like the day-to-day activity of like, how do you schedule it in? Because that's the world that we live in.
Yeah.
And like all habits and disciplines, it require a lot of energy to insert it. And you have to substitute that for something. Like, something needs to come off the plate in order for you to create space for anything new. I mean, yeah. We in Americans or Western cultures, we are just consumers. So we just keep on adding things to the plate. And then, you know, we're like hoarding. I should do like a mind hoarding for mind or something seminar. Because that is one thing I see that you do for work is clearing out other stuff so you can put the stuff that you really want to own inside.
Yeah.
And that's the number one barrier. Yeah. Is not just scheduling the time and the discipline, is like people don't know what to do when they get there.
That's true. And just to your previous point too, is that, you know, in this moment, everybody is competing for our attention. So there are a million amazing podcasts. There are, you know, not just, you know, dumb shows to numb out on, but there are incredible documentaries to watch. There's just all sorts of media that is just dying for our attention. And there is this sense that we just don't have enough time to take it all in, which we don't. We just, there's way more than we can ever take in. And like, even when we're commuting, even before all of this, you know, technology brought all of these thought leaders right to our fingertips, for our daily commute, you know, we would fill our time with the radio or, you know, whatever, you know, morning talk shows or, you know, whatever. This is the human mind has been avoiding looking at itself for a really long time. And we just have more excuses now than ever not to look. But yeah, habit stacking can be really key here. Like me and the morning walk, you know, it could just be a walk where I'm just zoned out or where, you know, I practice awareness and like present moment awareness during my walk as well. But then I also, you know, lean into my intentions and lean into how I'm feeling and how maybe I've, you know, today's Friday and how has this week gone for me? And, you know, what am I looking forward to for next week? Things like that, like planning and conceptualizing. But it's just, you know, we've got to figure out ways where you can put it in. And maybe it's in your shower, like everyone's taking a shower or a bath, you know. And, you know, most of the time I'm zoned out in the shower. But if I practice a little bit more attention, like that could be a place where I practice reflection, you know, the morning commute, while we're exercising. You know, but all of these don't allow us to write stuff down or to capture our thoughts. And that's a whole other aspect to reflection, which is not just paying attention to the thoughts that are going by, but actually getting them outside of our body, like physically, literally outside of our body so that we can look at them and go, whoa, well, that's curious.
Yeah. You know, I think that the number one thing to do is to understand that the process is just asking yourself some key questions. And I have like three questions that are, you know, automatically associated with certain activities that I do. So brushing my teeth, like what do I want to feel at the end of the day? What do I want more of at the end of the day? Do I want to say I've rested more? Do I want to play more? Do I want to be more productive? And that's just, what do I want more of is like a question. The other thing is like to notice all the time that my thoughts are not real. They're not me. And actually nobody else is thinking them. Like of course they belong to me, but they're not me and they're not real.
That's right.
Like reality's outside of myself. I mean, inside of myself, these thoughts are just, you know, the way the brain is made up to make meaning. So is the moment I can think something and the moment I hear somebody else saying a thought, I'm like, that's not real. That's an interpretation, which are powerful. And we get to choose how to interpret ourselves in the world. So that's like a reflection all the time. Like my thoughts are not real. Now it's time to reflect on them. So the process really is asking yourself questions. I feel like that if reflection has to do with asking yourself questions or making statements that open up that space. So does that make sense? The two things.
Yeah.
But I think that oftentimes people will start meditating or there's lots of access to apps or programs now, and they still don't know what the procedure is.
Yeah.
Self-inquiry. self-description.
Yeah, there's a huge range of outcome for meditation, right? For everything from just basic physiological stress relief, which is not to be shirked at. I mean, it's an important part of being healthy, but, you know, if there's, you know, you can go so much deeper in terms of getting to know yourself with certain meditations and also with specific meditation practices to reprogram, you know, a lot of those thoughts that, you know, I think like 95% of the thoughts we think today are the same exact thought we thought yesterday.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, we literally are just broken records running on repeat. And you're so right. Like those thoughts are not us. Like that thought, you know, was either created by us from something that occurred in our lives, or it's someone else's thought. It's not even our thought, you know, that we have internalized.
Yeah. The other day I said to, you know, one of my best friends, I was like, I need the noise or something like that, which is I need the noise in meditation. I like sound in meditation because it focuses me.
Yeah.
And as soon as I said it, we both laughed and I was like, you think you need the noise? And that just has been a repetitive, you know, thing in my whole life.
Yeah.
The fascinating thing is like, you know, I just wrote the letter code and it does talk about what you think about love. And until I really took a knee and created space to analyze all the files I have in my brain and the little markers I have in my repetitive body that is associated with love and deep, intimate connectivity with another human being, I was clueless in the dark about these repetitive thoughts I had about myself and typically about partners as well. So most of us don't really see the benefits, the return on investments of reflection, because it takes more investment than the immediate returns do. However, the long-term ROI is significantly felt. For example, you know, initially when you start reflecting on stuff, it's uncomfortable because you see some good things, but you know, your brain is, like you said, trained to see the negative, like 80% ish?
70,
yeah. Right? So our brain is hardwired. The emotional center of the brain is called the amygdala. Everything goes through that first, and it's hardwired to look for problems. And and actually, even is hardwired now even to look for solutions, because if you can quickly move to solutions, you're getting away from the problem.
Exactly.
So just because you're solution focused does not mean that you're not problem focused too. Most of the time, it's both. And it's uncomfortable. Reflection's uncomfortable because you're seeing things that maybe are almost always a challenge to look at. And then it's really oftentimes our automatic reaction is self-blame or shame or guilt or not feelings of good enough. And so tell me what you would advise your clients or yourself to help mitigate that uncomfortable return on investment that reflection includes.
Yeah. So a quick point on that, I just heard some science on that yes, you know, we're hardwired to see the negative because it keeps us safe, but also we are hardwired to create stories about our experience. And every time we create a story that has a beginning, a middle, and an end that is tidy and can be wrapped up, we get a dopamine hit. And we get that same dopamine hit whether or not our story is true and accurate or just a story that fits a model that has a beginning, a middle, and an end, and that produces certainty in our mind. And so, you know, every time we go into reflection, it's kind of like we're, you know, I call it the cave of the serpent, and we are the serpent and we're going into this cave, and it's dark and it can be scary. But what's happening when we are not reflecting is that we are living out these stories that aren't true, that don't serve us, that don't serve the world, the planet, our fellow humans. And we've got to create safe space to go into that cave. And even though it's scary, I can't tell you, like, time after time after time, like, everyone that comes out of the cave with me says, I'm so glad I went in there. I was scared, but I feel so much lighter now. I feel so much more peace now. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking about doing like my 4-month program that's super transformative. I'm talking about a 90-minute reflection period.
Sure. No.
You know, I'm talking about like, what's that?
I said even 45.
Yeah, exactly. No. Yeah. Even if you spend 15 minutes, but you know, as I said, I'm there, I'm the guide, I'm creating the safe space. You're not going into that space alone. And I think that the return on investment, when you actually, you know, sit down and do it, I think you can have quicker results. Yeah. And I think I'm with you that the long-term ROI is outrageous. I mean, it's incredible. The type of life that you will lead as a result is a life of much deeper meaning and richness.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard two things that you said. First, like the immediate return on investment is that you have connectivity between whoever you're asking for help. Mm-hmm. That's like phenomenal of when you say, I'm really going to commit to reflecting more. I'm going to have a space, and you allow somebody else to support you to make that change. Mm-hmm. The connection actually always deepens. You can feel it when you share. And then even if you share what you reflect on, then you're like, that's another hit of another dopamine, which is I'm happy to hit that dopamine fix, which is true connectivity with another human being. It feels just as good. We're just as hardwired for that. So you got to substitute that craving in a way that actually serves you rather than weakens you.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
And then the second thing I always say to people is, listen, if you don't feel some emotional struggle, some hunger, some a little bit of, you know, twinge or teak, then you're numbing out your fuel for change, because people don't change because of logic or philosophy. Nope. People change because of that emotional heat.
Yep.
And the immediate return on investment is to feel more disciplined, to feel more gritty, to feel more empowered when you're tolerating that space. And that is
alive.
Also a hit. It's an epinephrine hit. So those are the two things that I kind of heard you say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, what's one more thing that you want to share before we wrap it up?
You know, I have my reflection deck coming out soon. That's one thing that's super cool. Put in a little plug for myself.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a great way to further self-reflection, both on your own or in a group. And it's just a deck of cards where each card represents a concept or an archetype or a shadow aspect of yourself. Not all of them are shadow aspects by any means, but some of them are. And it's just a way to carve out a little space, look at who you've been and also how you want to show up. And you know, just a series of questions to, again, get deeper to yourself.
I like this because that's giving people understanding of the process, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I do something called check-in, and oftentimes I stack that with dinner or always if I'm with a group. People, I have a reputation for check-in, but that's also a process. And your reflection deck takes check-in to a whole other level because it's really a deep dive. And that's like the most, you know, fascinating thing that we need is guides. And most of it, they're human guides that have decided to express something creatively. But I'm a believer in that. So
Well,
thank you for our time today. And I know that I am always influenced to be a little bit more deliberate when I'm in your space and sharing with you. So I deeply am honored and thank you.
It was a total honor and pleasure for me to be with you today. Yeah, I love sharing space with you as well.
Yeah, of course. So people know where to find me. Obviously drcrystalwhite.com. And where can they find you?
Sure. My website is my name as well. It's annamclint.com. Of course, I have a curious first name, which is Anna spelled with an E. So it's annemklint.com.
Perfect. Be well, friend. I'm looking forward to our time next time.
Me too. Thanks again.